welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field. And hello, today I am here with Helen Palmer from Questo. Hello, welcome.
Thanks, nice to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Helen, Questo, really unusual name. It's a new business name for you.
Yes.
Tell me, where did it come from? What does it mean?
Well, on the very practical level, it came from a whole lot of soul searching and searching for names to try and find something. But it felt very serendipitous when it did appear, because one of the aspects that had been on my mind is, how can I help people with quests through their workscape? And so I've created this notion of a workscape, as in contrast to a landscape, as a place where you as a person travel through in your work experience, but that organizations are a place which creates a workscape. So I wanted to help individuals and organizations on their quest through the workscape. The sense of question pops up in there too, and it's very much about being open to the questions. Not necessarily we're going to find answers, and I think there's an emerging sense for organizations and individuals of, I don't know what the answer is. And it's like, well, maybe what we need is better questions, not actually finding answers. So allowing the possibility of, we can ask questions and we can sit with them while we're figuring out what the answers, and we may not get there. And the third one, it's a bit of a fun. People go, oh, it's like, you know, hey, presto. Like, absolutely. Because as it's possibly becoming evident to viewers, there's a kind of energy and pizzazz and a spin that I like to bring to things, that it's not just, oh, another change program, a bit of comms and whatever. I want to put a bit of life and spice, so that kind of sense of energy and vibe.
Excellent. That's fabulous. Thank you. So, Helen, you're one of the leaders of the Change Management Professionals Community of Practice here in Melbourne, and that's how we first came to know each other, I think it was, way back in the early days. And we have been able to work together, which has been really good fun. One of the things that I noticed in working with you is that your work is quite differentiated from other people in the change management practice, as it takes a really strong focus on design. I'm wondering if you want to unpack that a little bit and tell us what design means for you, you know, design thinking, design-led, what's your world of design?
I think some people, when they hear design, think it must be this whole process of intense kind of research and R&D type thing to produce a particular kind of outcome. Yes, that's one aspect of design. I see it more that I'm taking a principle-based approach, and that I understand there are some useful principles to follow, and if I apply those by design, in the sense of with intention, then different kinds of outcomes can happen. And so I draw on different sets of principles that may come from the learning design field, that may come from the user experience field, and I look for ways to put them into practice in what I'm designing. And of course, the thing that I'm designing from a change point of view is the program of change, or actually I like to see it as the experience of change. So for me, I see learning and change as two sides of the same coin. So people who are going through a changing experience are going through a learning experience. So what is it that, and you know, as everybody understands from a learning point of view, that's emergent. You don't know necessarily what's going to happen. So taking a bit more of a principle-based approach rather than a here's a step one, step two methodology approach allows a bit of freedom for what's going on here, what's appropriate. Mm-hmm. The second aspect of it is, it's a common term now, but human-centered design. It's not just design for design's sake. I recognize it's people. And people have certain kind of quirks and foibles, and I have a particular passion that will come out, I'm sure, in what I'm saying right now, about this notion of machine-centric views of organizations, if somehow they're an engine. And there's often that language in that
engine. Could be finely tuned.
Indeed, and people are almost like a widget, and we plug and play. And I think sometimes the change methodologies or the change that's going on is almost like people are just widgets in the engine, and we're just either making them better widgets or we're taking them out and changing them. And for me, it just has the sense of you've missed the beauty, the possibility of humans, and yes, with all their foibles of what might be seen as irrational, illogical behavior, but that could easily be seen as creative, spontaneous, ingenious behavior. And so I think coming from that point of view of, hey, what are the realities of being human? Let's start from that instead of saying, you know, get rid of that. We want rational, logical human beings, and we're going to do some training and upload what's required and, you know, get the right kind of behaviors. And I think for me, the possibility of the creative uniqueness of an individual and of a collective of individuals going through change just held so much promise and possibility, and I want to bring that out.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine that conversation with a project sponsor, and I'm just wondering, how does that go? Tell me, do you normally work with projects, or do you work at a higher level with leaders in the organisation?
It's more at the project level. I want to work more at the strategic level, because I think that's where you can get in early enough to set the right kind of tone and approach on a project. If you come in later, then there's an expectation almost like, and I know we've talked about this before, it's kind of like you headed a bit of training and comms.
Mm.
And I think, wrong approach, wrong level, wrong in so many ways. And so it's about if we actually had a view up front of how we were going to view people. So coming back to your question about how do I introduce it, I don't go in saying I'm going to do design.
Yeah.
Because I think that can kind of set all kinds of reactions off. Mm-hmm. What I will say is, I'm going to think about what's going on in this organisation and inquire and engage with people before I give you any kind of strategy or document. So if you're expecting me to come in week one and produce the document and put it out there, then I'm not your gal. Don't call me, because it will be, well, I could put one of those together. But a design aspect is to think, is this what's fit for purpose and right here? So I remember one sponsor saying, so what I want is, emails sent out on a fortnightly basis. And I was thinking, okay, was it a university? What I know about universities are everybody gets emails, so many emails with so many words on them. I actually don't think that's going to get us the outcome we want. So let me understand, what is the outcome you want? Oh, you'd like some smart communications. Well, maybe email is completely off the table. And so there was sometimes when I can bring an example like that in, it gives me a bit of a sense of like, what's their appetite for thinking differently about things. And that's partly what the design is. It's not, we're going to do things in this kind of step and follow this methodology. It's, hang on, what situation do you have here? What's fit for purpose? And then let's find the elements. And for me, there's an element of resourcefulness in that too. Mm. It could well be that you have an amazing group of people here. If we just found them and we empowered them, we could have a bunch of really effective champions, change champions.
Yeah.
And that would be the best way to invest our time and our engagement, not thinking, oh, is it 5 emails a day and which email channels are we going to send through, or let's get a website up. These are all useful things to have in the toolbox. But if you're just having the conversation at that level without thinking, yes, but what would an email achieve? Why are we sending an email? Oh, it's to communicate. Okay, well, why are we communicating? Well, it's to engage. Okay, well, what's the engagement about? We want to win the hearts and the minds of people. Let's just think, how many hearts and minds have been won by the recipient of an email in your inbox telling you what's going on? Yeah. So it's about putting it in that bigger context of, who are these people? What is the kind of cultural landscape in which we're working, and what's the kind of appetite? And if you've got a situation where people, for example, are very anti the change that's coming, continuing to communicate by email, which puts a lot of emotional distance, is not going to change the nature of that landscape. What we need is a lot more relational kind of stuff. Whereas if you actually had, oh no, everybody's, this is just a bit of a the light switch kind of change, well then maybe email's appropriate. But for me, there's very much a sense of horses for courses, and I won't know what I would be best to advise until I've talked to people and found out what resources you have. Yeah. And so very much that's part of the sense of where the design aspect comes in. I'm trying to look, what can we, and I know I hate this word leverage, but, what could we utilise that you've already got around here that can get us to the point of finding that sweet spot?
Yeah. So you mentioned before learning design principles. Can you give me an example of how that might play out on a recent engagement, and in terms of what were the learning design principles that you used?
So there's various levels of learning design principles, but one that can be very useful to talk to people about is, for example, about cognitive overload or and a person's absorptive capacity. Now, when I'm designing a learning event, I'm looking to think, well, look, shall I talk for 60 minutes on a particular piece of content, or actually should I talk for 10 minutes and then let's have an engagement to act and play with that idea. So I just take that from that would be inside a course, maybe inside a classroom, and think across a program, actually, what's some ways to understand what is the change or the behaviour or the outcome of the learning we want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's work back from that. So if the point of some kind of communication was, we actually want people to be informed sufficiently enough to act in a particular way, okay, then let's dial that back and think what might be the useful ways to inform people. So it might be send an email, but it might not be only sending an email. In the email that we might have thought, oh, let's cram everything in, it turns out to be a 700-word email, and people get it and think, oh my goodness, you know, where do I start to read it? It could actually be turned into a nice, pithy, succinct 50-word email that's an invitation to come to some kind of information session where people can draw on the questions they want rather than be pushed a lot of information we want to give. And so it just plays around with, well, what is it that people want to know and how much can they take on and which time do they take it on? So that's a kind of example of rethinking what is an appropriate way to engage here when I consider something like what is people's capacity to absorb what's going on.
See. So I think you also mentioned user experience.
Yes.
And UX is not typically a space that plays into the change management field, although some could argue that it should, or maybe it does with different language. Yes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Tell us about, I guess, you know, user experience and design.
Experience is an interesting word because most people, when they think UX, think a piece of technology and your experience of engaging with that technology. And sometimes it's seen as, oh, it's a little bit more than interface design. So interface design might be the graphical elements on the screen, and then experience design is seen as, well, what was your experience of using that? Was it at one level usable and intuitive? At the other end, was it delightful and pleasurable? I take some of that thinking and think, what if it was about the interface between a person and the change that's going on in the organization? Mm-hmm. So let's reuse those principles and start thinking, so if the entire program of change was seen as an experience rather than a series of communications that were going out to you, we might start to imply thinking like, what if the first part of the experience was actually about a acknowledgement that we are losing something. So you might start to bring in thoughts about, well, what's a natural experience where you have where there's some loss and grief, or maybe a funeral. Now, I'm not saying you turn your change program into a funeral, but you might look and think, look, in an experience like that, there are different things we do as humans for ritual and symbolism that help us move through a stage of loss. So we could think about that portion of what is it to set aside some things and deal with our grief about losing something. At the other end, where maybe something's launching, you could think, what if we treated this like a party? And what might it be like if we, the change champions, saw ourselves as the hosts to a party? And what if we were to say to people, we invite you to come to this party and this experience, and we'll provide some hospitality, which could look literally like, you know, here's some catering, or here's a space that you came into with nice music and balloons or some sense of fun. But taking that sense of we as humans, we do participate in meaningful symbolism and rituals and experience. So what if you were to say, I'm going to take those elements and overlay them and how I think about this change program and treat it with that rather than a sense of there's a whole lot of comms going out or training kind of activities, which functionally it's there, but it kind of feels sterile and bereft of a sense of, well, I'm human. I want to be enthralled, or I want to be challenged, or I want to be consoled. And so
that really taps into the human-centric side of it.
And it's even recognizing, hey, as humans, we want to be enthralled, or, you know, in grief, we want to be consoled. And I think sometimes in organizations, there's almost a sense like, almost like a parental thing of like, you'll do this because I told you so. And or a dictatorship of like, you know, I'm in charge here and I said this will be the change and you all should just fall into line. If you want a job, fall into line. I think you don't have to take a line like that. You could think, okay, I as the leader of the organization, I may not recognize, but I could get in the headspace of recognizing I have a level of agency and influence of what's going on here. What might it be like for people who have less of that agency or influence? So getting an empathic understanding, you know, here we are back in design territory. What might I use from some tools to get an understanding of where people are at and where what kind of readiness there is to change, and then actually engage with them in a way that uplifts certain elements. And that's where it can speak to an appreciation of some human factors, which on one level could be this is really stressing people out. So physiologically, adrenaline's pumping into their system, and there's lots of evidence from science that tells us it's very hard to pay attention, take on information when you've got adrenaline pumping into your system. So then there may be practical things about saying, hey, people, take a walk, breathe fresh air, have some vitamin B. And there's some kind of practical things you can build into the experience because you recognize that what this change is bringing is creating a kind of internal experience for people. And we could actually do things that mitigate that or minimize that or amplify it, you know, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Shall I break into song now?
Well, we could have a new theme song, really. Yes. But so I think I probably the final thing I wanted to pick up on is you recently published a blog post on LinkedIn, which resonated with many, and you contrasted the the typical principles of project management, time, cost, budget, with the principles of change being hope, trust, compassion, and stability. Can you tell us a little bit about what drove you to write that and the type of feedback you've had about that post?
The initial thing is the frustration how many people think, oh, change management, that's project management. And I wanted something to kind of carve out and say, no, we both have a view of change and the steps we might go through. However, there's a different set of things to be doing or watching out for or cultivating. And I had read the book by Tom Rath, and I forget his co-writer's name, called Strengths-Based Leadership. And in there they talked about the Gallup poll people and the Clifton Strengths Finder. They talked about how followers want four things: hope, trust, compassion, and stability. And fundamentally, what a leader's job is to build trust, create hope, provide stability, and show compassion. And particularly for them, from a strengths point of view, there are many different characteristics of people that those four things can show up differently. But for me, it seems such a nice kind of succinct way to say, if that's what followers want under normal conditions, they'll want that just as much when change is going on in an organization. And when I flipped it around and thought, when I look at change that's gone on in organizations and where I think there's been a failure to consider humans, it's often around, well, you weren't doing anything to build hope here, or trust was not anywhere near it needed to be. In fact, everything you were doing was creating mistrust. And that while there's a sense of change has got a level of chaos in it, there could have been some stability about things that didn't need to be treated chaotically, that gave people a bit of a platform to deal with the other change that was out of their control. And the big one, compassion. I mean, compassion can be very practical in the sense of, like, right, it's Friday night at 5 o'clock. Should we send out a message with big news right now in an email that you may find on the weekend? It's like, well, no, the compassionate thing might be to hold that over till the next week. Or the compassionate thing, when we have bad news to deliver it, let's deliver it in person. Yeah. Let's show up and let people be have a moment of grief. Mm. Let people be angry instead of like, oh, no, good change is get rid of all the dissent and all the resistance. No. We're compassionate and recognize that people will have these reactions. And we find a way to compassionately help them be in that space and move through that space.
Yeah, awesome. Helen, if people want to continue this change chat with you, which I suspect they may, given your passion for the topic, where can they find you?
So the Questo website has a blog post that people can sign up to, or they're very welcome to follow or connect with me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So Helen Palmer is the full name, and you'll find even this blog post there about the human lens for change management. Yeah. And I also have a Twitter account, Questo_AU. Mm-hmm. They might like to follow there.
Ah, that implies global domination coming soon.
Indeed, and it started here today with you and I.
Helen, this has been great. I'll make sure that in the post notes we'll include all those details, and for those listening, feel free to follow Helen up in the future.
Sure. I'm clearly passionate about making change in the world. Come join me in my dream.
Thanks, Helen.
If you enjoyed this change chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.